Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for listening to What Mama Wants. I kind of think Mother Earth wants less toxics and more health. This is a chance to hear from educators, citizens, policymakers, and scientists about the role toxics are playing in our daily lives. Things like PFAS, plastics, and arsenic. And we always wonder what Mother Earth wants while we're at it. My guest today is Sarah Nichols from Natural Resource Council of Maine. She's the Sustainable Maine Director and is a nationally recognized waste policy expert. Sarah leads the local and state efforts to reduce waste and litter, encourage reuse, and increase recycling and composting in the state of Maine. Welcome to What Mama Wants, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Super glad to have you here. Thank you for coming in last minute. My other guest had COVID, so she'll be in a couple weeks, and it's wonderful to have you here. Your organization does great work, and there are some things I really want to personally thank NRCM for. The Maine bottle bill, where they put 5 cents on the head of every bottle, made for a very successful program. And also, no billboards in Maine. I realized when I was looking at your website that it's NRCM I have to thank. So thank you to the good people of the Natural Resource Center of Maine. I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about your organization.
Sure. Yeah. So I've worked at NRCM for about 8 years now. Very honored to be working at this organization. We're located in Augusta, right next to the State House, which is good proximity for us to continue our good work to defend and protect Maine's environmental laws and expand them. A lot of what we do, you know, is watchdogging and making sure, you know, sometimes we're just making sure the bad things don't happen too.
Yeah, watchdogging. I haven't heard that as a verb. Well, you're doing great work and you're getting a lot of national recognition for that work. One of your stated points in your mission is to promote sustainable communities through initiatives that reduce toxic pollution and waste, which, of course, I love. Mm-hmm. I wondered if we could talk about that in relation to plastic pollution, the major issues of our time.
Right. So when I began working at NRCM in 2014, that's when plastic bag bans, for instance, were really kind of coming to the forefront. A lot of towns and cities were interested in doing what they can to reduce plastics use. And plastic bags are really the low-hanging fruit. It's just one of those things that's completely unnecessary. And it's something that was polluting our landscape and environment and clogging storm drains and making things just really expensive for towns. So we helped something like 25 towns pass their plastic bag ordinances, and that really led to the momentum that led to the statewide plastic bag ban. We were the fourth state in the nation to do that. That same year, we banned styrofoam food containers from use in Maine, and several towns had passed that. Actually, Freeport was one of the first ones back in the late 80s, I think, or maybe it was 1991. Anyway, a long time ago. So
yeah, really.
That was a long time coming, too.
Mm-hmm. And that's something we can all see in our daily lives. There are things that are banned that we didn't know were in a product, and we never can be aware of how much we're saving, but that one really has impacted all of us.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the more I learn about plastic, the more I really don't like it. I'm increasingly anti-plastic, but I think it, as in general, humans have just been really, really irresponsible with our use of plastic.
Yes, and I think there are agendas now to make more plastic because as petroleum use goes down, there's a plan to use that petroleum product to make more plastics for us, and we're seeing it on football fields.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's everywhere. That's the plan of the fossil fuel industry. So, you know, for people who didn't know, the fossil fuel industry is the plastics industry, and as, you know, they're seeing the writing on the wall with our clean energy transition, they're doubling down on plastics production. And I'm sure many of your listeners have heard that one statistic that at this rate, there's going to be more plastic in the ocean than fish by weight by 2050. It's just all of the projections are going up, 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 unless we put a stop to that.
I feel like crying.
I know. It's really depressing.
That's really sad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any books or movies that you would recommend to people on this plastic situation?
I really like The Story of Plastic. I find it super compelling. They just do the best job. It's by the Story of Stuff project that people may have heard of.
It's a movie.
It's a movie. Mm-hmm. Yep. It was available on Netflix last time I checked, so I would check that out. NPR did a good one called Plastic Wars that you could Google also. Those would be my two go-tos right now.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks. When I saw The Story of Plastic, it changed. You know, you just bumble along doing what you do, and then you start realizing it's on everything, and we're drowning in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love how your expertise in policy really allows you to see that consumers are not to blame for plastic consumption. We need better systems so that people don't have to feel so powerless and guilt-ridden. I wonder, why isn't it just up to the consumer to choose toxic-free products?
You know, I think everybody has a part to play, individuals for sure, but it's a much smaller part than we need to stop making this stuff in the first place. And I think it's really the role of government on every level to set policies in place that make it really easy for people to avoid plastic where they can. Right now, you know, we're just on this receiving end of a fire hose of plastic materials. We have really no control over what things are made out of and where they're coming from when they get to us. And that's where policy really, really steps in. And, you know, like we, you know, we're just talking about the industries who make this stuff are that they're trying really, really, really hard to make more and sell more and convince us that we need it. So,
yeah, I love your concept of no victim blaming, because I think people really care and they really try. And we can spend a lot of time researching every single product prior to buying it on a special app on our phones. Or we could maybe not put PFAS in the mascara and plastic in the whatever.
Yeah, we need to make it easier. You know, I love how much people care and I want people to care, but I also want to free up their time to worry about other things in their lives, you know, like their families and their health and other things, and not have to stay up at night worrying about all these other issues that we really need better policy around to protecting people.
We need national leadership.
We do need national leadership.
And international cooperation, I'm sure.
Yeah, I have a little bit of envy from some other countries with their leadership. And
who's doing it right?
Honestly, every time I look at Canada, they're really moving the needle there as far as waste policy goes and plastic. The European Union as a whole, they work together as a group of countries toward common goals. And they're just doing a much better job than we are here in the United States. You know, hopefully we'll talk about the packaging law that we just passed here in Maine. We're the first state in the nation to make producers of packaging responsible for paying for the recycling and disposal and management of that material, just like they do in all these other places that I just mentioned. It'll be a while before that's implemented, but that's going to be a real game changer.
Yes, that is really exciting and excellent work. Kudos to you all and RCM. Yeah. A lot of toxic savvy citizens do have some support in disposing of toxics in Maine, thanks to NRCM. I wonder if you can tell us about some of the programs that you all run that keep toxics out of landfills. I know that sometimes people just ask each other on the street, like, what do I do with these batteries or this fluorescent light bulb? I know I'm not supposed to put it in the trash.
Right. So Maine's actually a leader in this whole special type of policy called Extended Producer Responsibility, or EPR. It's really just the polluter pays principle. So in 2010, the state passed a law saying that it's a policy of our state to actually move more materials into this type of system. And we have our DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, every year issues a report on the status of these programs and lists new potential products to be put in those categories. Into that type of program for legislation. So we have laws around electronic waste take back, unused drugs, cell phones, mercury thermostats, fluorescent light bulbs, unused paint. And you can look to NRCM's website on how to participate in those or at DEP too. But one of the things that I really like about this system is that, well, I guess that it's systematized. So there's five criteria, and one of them is if the material's toxic, then it only has to pass one of these criteria, then this is a key way to manage that material. And even the packaging fits into that model too. So there's a lot of toxics in packaging. Even though we're working on phasing those out, they're still there. Our voluntary programs really aren't sufficient, and there's success of these working in other places. So these are all check marks for those.
So if I had medicines that we don't need anymore that have expired, what do I do with them? How do I find out?
Right. So right now, people will have to rely on their annual take-back events that are usually held at police stations or, you know, where these are regulated substances as they should be. But this new law that we've passed will be implemented over this next year. There will be kiosks available at most pharmacies around Maine, not all of them, but we'll be doing some media when that is rolled out, and you'll have the fifth state to pass this. So when you go to the pharmacy to get your new prescription, you can drop off stuff for free at your the kiosk there.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, it's great.
Real change, again, on a personal level. It affects the people in the state.
Exactly. Yeah, and the pharmaceutical manufacturers have to pay for that.
That's very cool. And your website is nrcm.org?
Yep.
Yeah. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to What Mama Wants, Less Toxics and More Health. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Sarah Nichols of Natural Resource Council of Maine, where she serves as a Sustainable Maine Director. Sarah has more than 11 years of professional experience in the field of waste management. Some of her notable accomplishments include successfully leading Maine's policies that ban the distribution of plastic shopping bags, foam food containers, and the nation's first extended producer responsibility for packaging law. It is now the policy of the state to move to a polluter pays model. That's really exciting, and that makes Maine a leader in this field. Sarah, tell us about how holding corporate polluters accountable and about how your big win in the legislature this spring, how that all comes together to keep the 16 tractor trailer trucks a day out of Maine, dumping their lead, PFAS, mercury into our toxic landfills.
Right. So this is an exciting win this year. And we had a bill called LD 1639. It was sponsored by Senator Ann Carney of Cape Elizabeth. This bill closed the loophole in our laws that allowed for out-of-state waste to come into our state, get disguised as in-state waste, and then continue on to our state-owned landfill up in Old Town Alton area. The thing about this is that the state bought that landfill back in 2004 to prevent it from being filled with out-of-state waste. If it's a state-owned resource, we can avoid the Federal Commerce Clause and say what goes in there. But what was happening is some companies who were profiting off of bringing in waste from out of state where they've banned disposal of these materials, they were coming here, getting, you know, disguised as in-state waste and heading onto the landfill. And that
How
was at the
How do you disguise it? Like a really big nose and eyes and glasses and mustache?
Well, basically, that waste couldn't come in and just get sent directly to the landfill. It had to stop at some sort of solid waste processing facility in Maine. There, they would, you know, maybe pull out some materials, maybe 10% on a good year, but mostly just kind of grind it up, and then after that it would become residue from a Maine solid waste processing facility. So it was Maine waste, even though they weren't really processing much at all. You know, they weren't doing much good with the waste.
That's
really
the loophole.
That was the loophole.
I get it.
Yep. Uh-huh. So now they can't do that anymore. The law will go into effect next year. Yeah.
So the contractors demolish something in Massachusetts, and they were bringing it here. And and you said it had lead in it and mercury. What kinds of things are in the discarded house parts that have these toxics?
Yeah, so this is the kind of waste a lot of people don't really think about. When we think about trash, it's usually your household trash, like mostly food scraps and packaging materials and things like that. Just a piece of our waste pie here. So construction demolition debris is really, if you demolish any buildings or homes, so let's say a lot of sheetrock, you know, which filled with gypsum, which really contributes to hydrogen sulfide gas production in landfills, concrete and lead pipes, asbestos, anything that you might find in a building, a lot of PFAS that's maybe in the carpeting or any bulky waste that might have that in there too.
The mercury in the thermostats,
exactly.
Right? And just push it down and don't take those things out first.
Yes, exactly. So there's all kinds of stuff in there. And other states, Massachusetts notably, has banned the disposal of a lot of that material. It has to go to a processing facility first. So those contractors, their willingness to pay is high because they have to bring it to a place like that. So they're bringing it to Maine. They get a lot of money for that and then send it along to the landfill for less money, and that's the whole profit margin. It's just the difference between the Massachusetts contractors might pay to bring it here and then how little they have to pay to dispose of it.
The profit for the Massachusetts contractors?
Oh, no, for the facilities bringing it in. Basically, there's some companies that were profiting quite a bit from bringing this waste in from out of state.
I see. So if you run a landfill, you get money every time someone drops off a truckload.
Yes.
And that's the profit.
Yes. So we have a private waste company, Casella Waste Systems. They run the landfill for the state, and they have a 30-year contract to do that. So they like to treat that like their own private landfill, but it's a really special one. The state bought it for that reason. Its capacity needs to be preserved for the people of Maine as it was intended. And I think until, you know, I've just been noodling lately that, you know, we're often with waste policy up against companies who profit from making more waste. And until we kind of change that whole system, we're always going to have this problem. So it just begs the question, should we have large waste companies be nonprofit entities, or should they be regulated like utilities? So just thinking into the future, how are we going to avoid this conflict? And it makes it really hard for lawmakers to make these decisions, too, because, you know, they're getting pressure from all sides. These are businesses.
These are businesses, yes. And we need to incentivize producing less waste.
Yeah, and it's hard to do when you have businesses who profit off of more waste and they have a lot of lobbyists.
Right, and they're like, hey, throw it away. We'll take it for you.
Yeah.
It all sounds so good, except it goes somewhere.
Oh, yeah. There's no such thing as a way.
No, there is not. So what does this mean for Maine to have closed this loophole?
Well, it means a lot to the people who live near the landfill, who have been seeing it. This landfill has increased in size faster than anybody anticipated. It's due for another expansion in the next 5 or 6 years at this rate. So I think even just slowing the fill rate and drawing a lot of attention to what the capacity left there and the purpose of the landfill is just great. For long-term planning, these people suffer loss of, you know, just the health risks of living near a landfill. You know, the truck traffic, the smells, the, you know, their property values, all those things. And, you know, the landfill leachate. So
that's the goo that comes out the bottom.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff that comes out of a landfill.
It rains on every trash. Landfill.
Yes.
And it filters down like a coffee filter, right?
Exactly.
And then out comes leachate.
Yeah.
That's the coffee.
Yeah. So we're thinking the coffee part is like the crushed up demolition debris that I was describing, and, you know, sludge and other all kinds of other things. And that has to go to a wastewater treatment plant to get treated. And then that's ultimately released into the river. This one happens to be in the Penobscot River, where the Penobscot Nation has their fishing rights. And that's where they live, and the water that they drink and the air that they breathe. And so this is just really as an environmental justice issue with the people living outside the landfill, not historically not having the standing that some of the waste companies do, and now they do. So this is just a huge win for everybody there that's been so concerned about this for decades. I'm just delighted for them.
It was a big year. And do you have concerns about next session? You know, are people going to push back against this LD 1639?
Things can always go sideways. I feel like this is decided. Yeah, it was, the Senate voted unanimously in support of this bill as an indicator that how important
something.
This is. Yeah, that's quite something.
Good job.
Yes, I know. It was an amazing moment. And, you know, but now the focus for next year, we're working with this one facility in Lewiston, which is the one that was taking in most of the waste from Massachusetts and sending it on. We're working with them to try to find more waste for them to source Maine-generated CDD waste so that more of that recycled and processed before it goes to landfill. So I think it's really helping us move the needle there. So hopefully we'll have a policy that we can all support for next session too. You know, and we also just want to make sure that we're not sending Maine's waste out of state. As we've just fought to protect our own state, we want to make sure that we're not shipping waste out either. And I've become aware that there's some activity that companies might want to send some of our sludge that can't be spread here now on Maine soils. They are thinking about spreading it somewhere else where there's lower environmental standards.
That's what happens in my town. I live in southern Maine, and so Casella takes it to Casella, New Hampshire, and spreads it on fields there, which doesn't bring me any solace because Casella, New Hampshire is not very far from southern Maine.
Right. So we really need to work with our partners in other states and strengthen the region and elsewhere and do what we can to take care of our own mess right here in Maine, where we can handle it better, manage it better.
Yeah. This is where we really see the absence of leadership at the national level, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
We all have to do these little things. It's like we're all in these 50 different teams, but we're all on the same team.
Yes.
We don't want to just push it around the plate.
Yeah, it's really hard because we need to do what we can here, but we also don't want to push our problems onto other people. That's, federal laws would be a lot better for a lot of these issues.
Yeah, yeah. And you studied all the things you're doing in undergrad and graduate school. Can you tell us a little bit about what direction you would point someone who's interested in making big choices for the environment like you do, like standing up for her?
Well, yeah, my undergrad was in environmental resource economics. I just found that fascinating. It, to me, is the study of how people make decisions, and it's prices in here too, and which is a lot of it. I think a lot of policy, we just need to set the right incentives in place. The other cool thing about that I'll say about that is when I was in school, I graduated 2005 from undergrad, there were 6 of us in our program, and now I think that there's hundreds. So I'm just really excited that there's so many people are interested in this topic.
It is exciting, and it's not a field any of us thought when we were kindergartners, I'd like to grow up and be a resource economist. But Yes, it's our future.
And I think a lot of people now also, you know, they want mission-driven jobs, and they want to work every day in jobs that match up with their values. So I think find out what you're passionate about and what your skills are and identify a career that's right for you. And the environment, it's not a place you go. It's something you're a part of. So I'm sure you can tie whatever it is that you want to do to protecting the environment.
We don't just go there. We are there.
Yes.
So speaking of there's Mother Earth. She is burdened by our plastics and our toxic trash. What do you think Mama would want if she were to have her full power of her voice heard?
I think that the Earth wants to be in balance. I think it's incredible that the human species has, as a group, has upset that balance, and we're able to upset the weather. It's kind of, it's just mind-boggling to me that we've done that. So I think, you know, I subscribe to this kind of George Carlin idea of sustainability. I don't know if anybody's seen his skit, but, you know, the Earth's been here for, you know, billions of years. We're just a little blip on the radar. And I think the Earth's going to shake us off like fleas, basically. The Earth is going to find a way to be fine. And humans, like, life is is what I think about when I think about sustainability. It's not, people call me a tree hugger, let's say, and I'm like, I'm actually trying to make sure that we can sustain life on this planet.
It's a big deal. It's about you. And it's a little worse than I think people want to admit.
Yeah, you have to have the right attitude to have this kind of job.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. Sarah, to close this interview, I'd like to ask you a few quick questions about your personal relationship with the Earth, if I could.
Sure.
Okay. First one, what was your favorite thing to do outside in nature as a kid?
Oh, as a kid. I think I would often make a lot of forts, I remember, as a child.
Little lean-tos or full-on climb up the tree?
Yeah, no, a little lean-tos, I guess. Out in the yard, I spent a lot of time outside. We camped a lot. Yeah, and I guess I still do that today. I try to make sure I get outside in the woods every day. I have a dog who likes to walk, too. So if I don't get on some kind of little trail for a little bit of the day, it just doesn't feel like a good
start getting a little twitchy.
Yeah, yeah. You feel like you're at home in the woods. Yeah.
And you grew up in Maine too, right?
Mm-hmm.
You left and came back.
People here grow roots for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's heartening to hear. Mm-hmm. Describe a scene in nature when you have felt awe.
Well, I do hike a lot, and I love bagging peaks and getting to the top and sitting there and having your moment before you get too cold and your sweat starts making you cold and you have to leave. Yeah, and just sitting there, and you earn that view too. So yeah, I always like to make some good time to sit there and reflect, and it makes you feel kind of small too, you know.
Yeah, puts things in perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's one thing your mother taught you about Mother Earth?
Oh, my mommy. I love my mommy so much. I want to cry. Oh, that's a hard question to put on the spot. I don't know. Maybe she's part of that, my polluter pays, you know, like pick up after yourself, you know, like
nice work, mom of the universe.
You know, and that's how I even describe the EPR for packaging law to my kids too. Like, if I'm expecting them to clean up the mess themselves, they'll make less mess in the first place. But if you leave it for somebody else to clean up, then it's a free for all, you know. So
yeah, it goes back to the think globally, act locally.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
In the kids' rec room.
Yeah, so
yeah, love it. What's one thing that you wonder about in nature?
One thing I wonder about in nature, like as
a natural phenomenon, or, you know, I think a lot about butterflies. They don't make any sense. Worms with wings.
Oh.
And I think everybody kind of has a little something.
Well, even actually somebody the other day just asked me, what time is it usually high tide? And I'm like, what? It changes throughout every single day. I have to check my tide chart app every day if I want to go to the beach. So I guess I kind of understand that. But I love the seasons very much. That's something I realized when I lived in Southern California, how much I missed the seasons. And it was beautiful out every single day. And you have people in Maine, they feel guilty spending any nice days indoors. And I felt like you didn't get your hibernation time. So I kind of like the seasons where the world kind of changes around you and you can stay put, but you still get that change throughout the year.
Yeah. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that Santa Barbara doesn't have it all over us. I mean, it's so perfect.
Perfect. I remember my parents came to visit and my dad said, he's like, even the trash trucks smell good here. I was like, I don't know about that, but it is beautiful. It's covered in flowers and it's just lovely.
Final question. What's your favorite baby animal?
Oh, that's a tough one. I don't know. I'm a real big sucker for puppies. Baby goats this time of year. Man. They can really tug at your heartstrings. I like baby kids. Everything. Even baby carrots are cute.
Baby carrots?
No.
That you give to your baby carrots?
Yeah.
Sarah, you are way out in front leading Maine's policy around waste, but you're also a really good citizen who works to make our state healthier and safer for your children and for the rest of us. Thank you so much for the work you're doing. It's hard work. It's a heavy lift, and I'm so grateful you were my guest today.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.